Welcome to That's History, our regular segment where we look at today's events and find echoes, parallels, and lessons from the past. I'm Chris Satullo, and I'm joined as always by Jonathan Zimmerman, historian from New York University. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here as always.
So, Jonathan, we're 50 years from the 1960s, and the 1960s having been the eventful decade that they are, and boomers being the nostalgic group that we are, we're talking about a lot of anniversaries of things that happened in the 60s. But to get to that point today, I'd like you to talk first about something that happened in your life 21 years ago.
Yes, almost 21 years ago, my wife gave birth to our first daughter. And we had been up about 24 hours. It was a lengthy process. And I was tired and a little dazed when the obstetrician placed my newborn daughter in my arms. And he said, "Now, do you have any questions?" And I just blurted out, "Yes, will she know who the Beatles are?"
Of course, that would be the first question.
It was the first thing that came to my mind.
Right. And does she?
She absolutely does.
Okay. So that is by way of preamble to a rather memorable 50th anniversary that's coming up. Tell us about that.
Yes. It's the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' first trip to the United States and indeed their first musical appearance, which was on the Ed Sullivan Show, which would have been two nights ago on February 9th, also a Sunday at 8 p.m.
So looking back in the buzz in the media and pop culture back when the Beatles made that visit, it was by no means a universal opinion or bygone conclusion that the Beatles' tour of the United States was going to be an eternally memorable event.
Not at all. In fact, throughout 1963, the Beatles were trying to get their record company in the United States to promote their records, and the company was refusing because they said that their market research told them that Beatlemania, which had hit London, hit the UK, was not going to transfer across the ocean.
What was it about the Beatles that people thought wasn't going to make it across the pond?
Well, there were a lot of things. I mean, strangely, they were a different kind of band because all four of them sang. So before that time, the kind of modal, the normal band, was a lead guy and a bunch of people in the background. So Bill Haley and the Comets, Buddy Holly and the Crickets. All four of them sang, and they also wrote their own music, which most of the other artists and indeed big-time solo guys like Elvis and Frank Sinatra didn't either.
And the other thing about them was the way they looked.
Indeed, and especially their hair, which was the most commented upon aspect of the entire Beatlemania phenomenon. In fact, once it became clear that they were coming over, in order to promote their trip, the record companies started to sell Beatles wigs. And they said that if you're working in a record store, you have to wear a Beatles wig.
So one thing is, when you look back at the film clips from their concert at Shea Stadium or their appearance on Ed Sullivan, the most striking thing about the topic of their hair is how amazingly short it was to have caused a sensation.
Yeah, and so what it reminds you actually was how straight-laced entertainment was. And I think the real genius of the Beatles from a marketing perspective was the way they managed to be out of the mainstream but also in it. So their floppy hair marked them as out of this mainstream, and everybody remarked on it. But at the same time, they wore suits and ties, and they were kind of optimistic and ironic, and in that sense also fit very snugly within the mainstream.
All right, being the fine historian that you are, you've gone back to that topic of what the mainstream looked like in American entertainment then, have looked at what the other acts were that famous night on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah, if you really want to understand the Beatles' revolution, you have to look at who else was on the bill that night. You had a magician named Capps, named Fred Capps, and he did a great trick involving a bottomless salt shaker.
I love that one, Jonathan. I mean, who could forget the bottomless salt shaker?
And then you add Frank Gorshin, who listeners might recognize because he later played the Riddler on Batman. But he really made his mark as an impressionist. So he came in and he, like, did Marlon Brando and people like that. And then finally, my favorite, Tessie O'Shea, the rather rotund banjo player with a fur wrapped around her neck. She comes in and plays a few numbers, and incidentally, she was most famous for her song Two-Ton Tessie from Tennessee.
Again, unforgettable. unforgettable moments in entertainment.
That's who shared the bill with the Beatles.
Right, and Ed Sullivan himself was a tribune of old-fashioned entertainment, former agent, and he wasn't exactly comfortable having the Beatles on his show.
And he was also a skeptic. I mean, his music director listened to them as they did their warm-ups the previous day on Saturday, and he said they're a flash in the pan. He said to Sullivan, the only thing that's different about them is their floppy hair.
We're talking with Jonathan Zimmerman, a historian from New York University, about the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' first tour of the United States and their famous appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. So a lot of boy bands have come and gone since then. And, you know, they've had their moments in the sun and their screaming crowds and all that. What's different about the Beatles? What separates them from NSYNC?
Well, I think there are a few things. I think, first of all, although it's a cliche, they really were first. Again, they were the first four vocal band. But it's also worth thinking about that they really had the first tour. That is the first American tour. Now, of course, anybody who makes it anywhere in the world is going to come and tour in America. But one of the reasons people were so skeptical about the Beatles' success here is there really hadn't been an organized tour, nor had there been big stadium concerts. The Shea Stadium shows, and incidentally, nobody could hear at them because the sound was so terrible, but they were revolutionary in their own right. The idea of packing a stadium with musical entertainment, which, again, for us now is completely accepted, that was radical at the time, and they really were pioneers in that way.
Now, another key to the durability of the appeal of the Beatles, I would think, is also because they evolved and they came to represent other things as the 60s wore on.
Definitely. And, you know, the Beatles were interesting. Obviously, each of them were different from each other, and that, too, was part of their appeal. So you had George Harrison, who had this encounter with Hinduism and became a vegetarian and taught himself to play the sitar and to integrate that into their songs. You had John Lennon, who was an art student, extremely volatile, kind of classic artistic temperament. You had McCartney, who had this kind of Tin Pan Alley, very almost romantic musical sensibility. And then you had Ringo, who was just Ringo. So each of them had their own personalities, which were distinct, even as they melded into this enterprise that collectively they called the Beatles.
I want to tell you a little story about my daughter, too, since you started with a story about your daughter. One time when she was like 13, we had a long trip down south for a vacation. She brought a friend with her. And this was before, if hard to imagine, but before headphones and, you know, MP3 players. So if we were going to listen to music, we were going to listen to their music for 10 hours down. I was dreading this. And it turned out they discovered a new band that they were just over the moon about. And they put in a mixtape of the Beatles and sang Beatles songs all the way to South Carolina. It was an amazing sort of transgenerational pop culture moment.
And it is really one of the only things that links us. You know, I do think that almost everybody knows who the Beatles are, in part because of the influence they had on everybody, but also because they're really the beginning of modern pop music, as we understand the idea.
It was 50 years ago, Jonathan. Do you recall where you were when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan? And we're going to be doing a lot of this through the rest of the 60s. Do you recall where you were? We started, I guess, with the Kennedy assassination. There'll be about another 15 of them before we're done.
Yes, I'm afraid I don't, Chris, because I was three. I'm a little bit junior to you. I think, though, you should tell our listeners where you were.
I was hanging outside the TV room in my parents' house. I'd been banished to go to bed because it was a school night, but my older brother and my parents were watching, and I hung outside very quietly so I could listen to the Beatles. And I did hear She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah.
And so, you know, what you were doing, I think, is also reflective of the Beatles' appeal. You were experiencing a kind of youth rebellion. Mm-hmm. More than anything else, that's what the Beatles represented, was youth. You know, A.E. Houseman, who was a famous poet in Britain, said that these are the lads who will always be young. And even when you look at Ringo and Paul today, you might not think of them as young, but I have to admit that I do, because they embodied a kind of youthfulness and the optimism and the potential and the exploration, the excitement that attaches to all of that. And that was their appeal.
And that's a point you've made, too, that this was the beginning of the transformation, which continues to this day, where music, popular music and popular culture and now the movies are essentially a youth-driven enterprise. You know, the things that the big investments are made in are the things that teenagers will do.
Definitely. I mean, you know, you also have to remember the Beatles came here at really the height of American Cold War prosperity. If you were born in 1946 during the real baby boom, you turn 18 in 1964, right when the Beatles came here. And because the country was prospering, a lot of these young people had money in their pockets. They had purchasing power, which indeed they still do. And so much of the entertainment industry, because of the Beatles, got targeted directly at the youth pocketbook.
That's Jonathan Zimmerman of New York University. He is our regular guest on That's History, and we've just been going back in a time to remember the Beatles. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks. It was fun.